All right, so I constantly wrestle with whether you just ignore things or you just and move on, or if you have to address them and make a joke out of them. And so I have to make a joke about it. And so apparently someone wanted me to have more time this morning, and so by moving through songs a little quicker. But so I'll take my time to do this morning, so in honor for her request. So that wasn't it. Oh, it wasn't until I had more time. Oh, well, you can think what you want to think, and I'll think what I want to think at this point. To be fair, I was all confused about communion, so apparently it's one of those mornings, so. All right, so I'll keep that in mind, and we'll allot my certain time, I guess, with this morning. But I want to start with some interesting situations. I don't know, it's been a while maybe that you've had a door-to-door salesman come and knock on your door and offer you to sell you something, but I've had some unique experiences with people coming to my door and interacting with me in different ways. The first one, there was a knock at my door, and I go to see who's at the door, and I don't see anybody, and I'm like, who knocked on my door? And I finally look down, and I see there's this little snail. And I look at the snail, like, what is the snail doing here? And so this was several years ago. This was when the kids were little, so I didn't know for sure what was going on. I didn't know if the kids had put it there or whatever. But this was a few years ago, so I pick up the snail, and I just throw the snail. I don't think any of it for a few years. And just last week, there was another knock on my door. I figured it was one of the neighbor kids, so I go and answer the door, and there's the snail there again. And he said, hey, man, what's that all about? Anyway, okay, apparently that didn't work. another time... It was a snail, it was several, and I shouldn't have to explain it, it was awful. Alright, so, another time, another experience I had, there was a knock on my door, and it was when we were living in Minnesota, they were redoing their community pool. And they came and they knocked on my door asking for a donation for this community pool. And I said, okay, wait a second, I went inside, I came back, and I handed him, and I said, here you go, and I handed him a cup of water. All right, 0 for 2 so far. All right, so last time was more recently here.
Are these true?
Yep, absolutely, 100%. Last one was just this last week or two here. And it was a door-to-door salesman. I don't know the last time you had a door-to-door salesman. But he was selling encyclopedias. And we don't have a set of encyclopedias, so I invited him in the house, and he starts to explain and expound on this wonderful product that he has and sharing all the different things. And he didn't get very far into it, though, and I said, you know, it's no good to me. I don't have a need for it. And he said, he was a little confused, taken aback a little bit, and he said, okay. But then he kept on going and explaining how wonderful these encyclopedias, all the knowledge that were in these volumes. And after he went a little while, I said, no, wait a minute. I told you I don't need these volumes. See, I've got a teenage boy, and he knows everything already. All right, so I was going to do knock knock jokes. Apparently, that's the way I should have gone. I should have gone with knock knock jokes this morning. All right. Well, anyway, so. Most of us don't think about doors very much. Probably don't even have a lot of knocks on our doors anymore these days because of various things of having phones and calls and being able to do different things now. We don't probably have a lot of knocks on our doors even anymore. And so what I wanted to think, unless you spend time really building or have hung doors or something recently, we don't think about doors much. When we were redoing the parsonage, it was actually kind of interesting. Some things with doors and how doors were going to lay and stuff kind of came up. And other than that, we just don't think about doors and why we have them and what their purpose is. And I guess with that in mind, I guess I thought it was important for us to just think about them a little bit differently or think about them a little bit more and what they do and how they, what they offer to us. But one thing I want to point out before we get too far into this is that doors, an open door is an invitation, right? An open door is an opportunity. I've been in a bigger area, a bigger city where there's several people walking down the street, and there's kind of a flow of people to a certain place, and then somebody opens a door expecting you to go in that same door. They open the door, and it's kind of awkward because you're not going to go in that door, and so you just kind of say, no, I'm not going that way, and you keep going. But even when you're not going to choose that door, even if you're not going to go down that path, even metaphorically speaking, you know, a job opportunity comes up or something before you, a relationship opens up and there's an opportunity, this door has been open, it feels pretty good, right? If we feel honored, we feel a little bit of respect or maybe even valued and loved to a certain extent. that these doors have been opened for us. And that's really what we're going to look at this morning, is what does it look like to have an open door? We're in the middle of this series that we're calling I Am. And there are these seven metaphorical statements of Jesus that Jesus makes about in the Gospel of John. And each statement is a personal reflection on Jesus or on his ministry, on what he's trying to express to us in different ways. And it really makes a lot of sense, I think, to do it this time of year leading up to Christmas, because they do reveal a lot about Jesus and why he came. And Christmas is all about why Jesus came and the fact that he came and what that means for us. And so we're going to go over this the next several weeks. Two things that I talked about, especially a couple weeks ago, maybe a little bit last week, that we need to remember when it comes to these I Am statements. These I Am statements, first and foremost, maybe not first and foremost, but first, is that Jesus, when he says, I am, he's claiming to be God. Okay, if we wanted to go back to Exodus 3:14, God says to Moses, I am who I am. When Moses says, who should I say is telling me this? Who says that I should do this? When Moses is supposed to lead the people out of Egypt, God says, I am who I am. And so when Jesus over and over and over again in the Gospel of John especially says, I am, he's claiming to be God. He's claiming his divinity. And I think it's important for us to remember. The second thing to remember more personally for us is each I Am statement is all about knowing Jesus, is knowing who he is, what he's come to do, and having that personal connection with him. Because we can know a lot about Jesus, what he's done, what he's said, the people he hung out with, the things he's accomplished. We can know about those things. But when Jesus says, I am, that is a knowing idea. That personal connection relationship. I've been using the phrase communicative account, and I don't know if I've explained it well. I don't even know if I completely understand it entirely with this idea of communicative account. But it's really the relational side of it. It's how are we connecting? How are we communicating? How are we relating to Jesus? And especially how he's revealed in these I Am statements. And so with that in mind, we're going to be in John chapter 10. In John chapter 10, we're going to see another one of his I Am statements and the things that he's expressed and what that means. But before we do that, I just want to put a little bit of context into this, what Jesus is going to say, this I Am statement that he's going to make for us this morning. And it really focuses around this idea of sheep, okay? And I'm not an expert on sheep. There are those of you that have raised sheep and know a lot more about sheep, so if I'm wrong, you'll have to correct me. I experienced sheep growing up on our little acreage when I was about, four or so. So my knowledge of them is from a four-year-old personally. So I had to pull a lot more from the internet. And so this is a little bit of that just to put us into context. So first of all the domesticated animals, sheep are the most helpless. They often spend their entire day grazing, just wandering from place to place, looking, never looking up. They see a blade of grass and just keep moving to the next blade of grass. And they often, as a result, become lost. Very lost. And they have no homing instinct. If you've seen the movie Homeward Bound with was a dog and two cats, or two dogs and a cat, or whatever it is, they were able to find their way home. And I don't remember the whole story, but they have kind of a homing instinct probably ingrained in them, whereas sheep do not. In fact, sheep can see their home, or their pen or whatever, and they can still be lost, right? They can see it in the distance, and they still can't find a way to get back there. And also, by nature, sheep are followers. If the lead sheep goes over a cliff, the other sheep are just going to follow him right after that. And also, and on top of that, sheep are easily susceptible to injuries, utterly helpless from predators. When there's a predator, maybe like a wolf comes into their pen, they don't scatter or run away or try to, escape the wolf. They get together and they just try to make a buffet for that wolf as easily as possible, kind of a thing, right? They just comp and they get together, very little defense mechanisms, and do very little to protect themselves. And so with that in mind, the shepherds needed a place, needed to be able to give sheep protection at night in order to be able to do something different for them. And so there are two options, especially for this time period that Jesus is in, these two options that are given for the sheep at night. The first one is a kind of a communal pen, closer to towns and villages. Several flocks of different shepherds would come and they'd stay in one pen together. So there'd be this communal pen of all these sheep moving around and spending the night. And so there'd be a doorkeeper or a porter who would guard that sheep, guard the sheep at night, only allowing the shepherds to come back in the morning. And then the shepherd would call out to his sheep, and the sheep would follow that shepherd. At least they recognized their own shepherd's voice, and they'd follow them, and they'd lead them out to pasture. The second kind of pen was more on the countryside. A simple wall of stone or rock built up, maybe some briars or thorns on top of it. And basically what would happen is that would be set up in the countryside somewhere, and the shepherd would lead his sheep into that pen, and then the shepherd himself would lay at the door. And he would guard that door. He would be guard that entryway and cover that opening so the sheep wouldn't wander out, and then wild animals wouldn't be able to enter in as well. And so, with all that in mind, the nature of sheep, these different pens, we're going to read John chapter 10, the first 10 verses. It says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, he who enters," this is Jesus speaking, by the way, "truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The shepherd hears his voice, and he calls by his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep will follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger will not follow. They will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved, and he will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." I just want to be clear with this, because metaphors can be confusing, and the people in Jesus' day didn't understand him, but we're the sheep. Okay? Maybe that offends us a little bit, I don't know. But we're helpless. We're simply grazing, never looking up wanderers who so easily get lost, and will really just follow people over cliffs pretty regularly too. We're followers. We often don't like conflict, maybe because we're lazy, maybe because it's too hard, so we just kind of do what's comfortable. And Jesus, in that way, is comfortable calling us sheep. Because we are. We're just like sheep. But as much as the negative, the helpless, you know, lost, wandering sheep that we are, sheep are also pretty lovable. They're also worth caring for. They're also worth spending time and energy to protect. And just like sheep in that way, we are as well. And so looking at these verses, as we looked at these different pens and these different things, the experience of the sheep, the first six verses seem to point to this idea of a communal pen. Somewhere near a town or a village, several flocks are brought together and left for the night. And we see that those who enter the pen by another route that is not right, that is not expected, that is not permitted, those are thieves and robbers. And the first time, when we first look at it, maybe we assume that the thief and the robber is Satan. He's the devil. He's coming in by any way. He's manipulative and he's tricky. He's stealthy. Maybe even in some ways uses force. That's kind of the image of thief and robber that we get. And so we kind of say, well, that's Satan. But in the context that Jesus uses it in, he's not just speaking of Satan. He might be relating to him to a small extent, but he's primarily speaking to those that are in the crowd near him. And in that crowd around him are his closest disciples, true. Maybe some crowd, some people just kind of there checking it out, but there are absolutely people that are opposed to him, people that want him gone, that he has pushed against and fought against, that are the leaders of that day, the religious leaders, the Pharisees, teachers of the law, those that desire for God, Jesus to get out of the way so that they can get what they want, because that's really what a thief and a robber are. They're not concerned about who they're hurting. They're not concerned about the sheep in that context and what's going to happen to them. They're only concerned about what they can get, how they can profit, what's in it for them. And the religious leaders, those that were put in charge or put themselves in charge of these people of God, these Israelites, these Jews that have been trying to follow God, these leaders have caused a lot of turmoil and chaos for them. And Jesus is one. It seems like one of Jesus' main points in coming was to push back on them. To even confront them, to challenge them, to look at the system that they've created and to try to get rid of it. And these thieves, these robbers, those that are tricking and those that are manipulating these people, have only come to steal and to destroy, to only get what they can gain from that. And so Jesus looks at these religious leaders again, has confronted them and challenged them, push back on them. He even calls them at times deceitful and selfish. But then in verse 7, he contrasts those thieves and those robbers with himself when he says, "I am the door to the sheep." These others have come, they've come in the back, from the side way, over the top, whatever other way they can to get to the sheep. I am the right way. I am the door. He's opened this invitation to all of them to say, follow me, this is the way to go. And when we think about doors, it's an invitation, right? Like I've said, it's a way, an opening, an opportunity that's laid before us. But it's also two other things. First, doors offer us access. And I don't know if you played with Lincoln Logs or maybe Legos. You've probably stepped on Legos at least, if nothing else, which is always fun, but... when I grew up playing with Lincoln Logs first and then Legos eventually as well. But one of the things to building a house, you know, it's great to have four walls and it's great to have a roof. The roof was always a challenge for me. I'm not an architect, and so I always had problems with the roof. My four-year-old yesterday was really excited about finishing his roof. I don't know, he just was having a good time, but... as important as those things are, unless you have a door... Four walls and a roof is really just a box, right? It's not a house. Your Lego minifigures, they can't go in and out of that little house. You need a door. And so the access to a house, access to anything, requires a door. It requires something that can open and close, that can give us that opportunity to draw into it. But the second thing that a door offers is protection. It offers protection. Lincoln Logs failed me when I was a child, right? And if you saw the last picture, I didn't have doors for... Maybe you guys had doors for your Lincoln Logs. They apparently make those. But I didn't have doors for my Lincoln Logs. And so my little people could go inside that log house, but if that wind blew or it snowed or there was, you know, especially like last Sunday night, if that stuff was blowing around, there wouldn't have been much protection. It'd go right in that door. It'd go right in those windows and wouldn't offer a whole lot of protection. Legos, however, you know, even if you get the basics, that usually seem to come with some kind of a door, and you can close them and open them and allow the people protection. Again, not only from elements, things that are outside, and obviously, unless you create the wind and put it outside, they don't probably have a lot of cold or snow, but, you know, protection from different things in their world, right? From animals, from wolves, for, you know, if you think of sheep, when you think of maybe even predators as far as people coming to hurt and damage and destroy. All of these different things a door offers protection from. And so the opportunity, the things that are available, and the images that Jesus tries to use, doors seem pretty simple, but they also seem pretty deep and meaningful as well. When Jesus says he is the door, he is vividly, again, contrasting himself with the religious leaders of that day. And he's just, as those that he's described as thieves and robbers, Jesus says he's the door. He's reiterating this fact that only through him is salvation possible. And he's removing any other opportunities available to us. There was this lady, it was a video, I don't remember what the video was about, but this lady had said, she was very very spiritually ecumenical, I guess would maybe be a good word for her. But she described her faith, her spirituality, in this way. She said, if you're sitting in a grand cathedral, right, with windows all the way around, there's light shining in from everywhere, right? And you can feel the warmth, and you can feel the heat maybe, and you can see the light and all these different kinds of things. The light comes in, and she called that light coming in this window, she called it God. That light is God. And she said, and if you look around all the windows, you can see the light from any one of those windows. And she said, well, if you look through this window, it might be the window of Buddhism, but you can still see God and you can experience God that way. Or this window of Mormonism, and you can still see and experience God through that. Or you look through this Islam or even Christianity. She would say, it doesn't matter which window you look at as long as you're looking at God. Whatever your God looks like, she would say. And Jesus says, that's not the way it is. I would say, yes, you can probably experience God in a small way because there is usually truth in a lot of those, a truth that is incredibly twisted and wrong and manipulative. But ultimately, Jesus says, the only light, the only window that you can look through and truly see and experience and know God is through him. It's through Jesus. It's through the door that he offers and that he, in fact, is. And again, only through Jesus is that invitation, that offering open, that access to God the Father. And it only happens through his death and resurrection, and his death on the cross and his resurrection. And it's only through him that we can have a relationship with the Father. But then Jesus says in verse 10 what that looks like and how that is important for us to hold on to. And he says, I came that you may have life and that you may have it abundantly. And so when we look at it and we look at the things that Jesus offers, he says, I have to come to bring you life and abundantly. There's a small metal door, small metal painted door painted white that's on the side of this tiny mission church in Johannesburg, South Africa. And the door is changing lives. It says on the door is painted the words, Door of Hope. And that's exactly what it offers to a lot of the babies in that city. On average, 40 to 50 babies are abandoned on the streets to die of exposure and starvation every month. 40 to 50 every month. And that was before, though, the missions installed this tiny little door, kind of this baby bin, for women and for families in that community, for them to anonymously deposit these unwanted babies, for someone to come alongside them to love and care for them. And so within a year, this mission is saving over 100 babies that would normally have been left on the street, left out to just die. And I think that image fits so well with what Jesus offers to us. He offers us that life. He offers us a chance. He offers us a hope and a future. And that life abundant, I think, does point to forever, right? It points to heaven. It points to that time that we can be with God forever and in that relationship with him. But I also think that he wants to give us now that abundant life. It's interesting in verse 9 when Jesus says, if anyone enters me, he will go, he will be saved, and he will go in and go out and find pasture. And I love that image of pasture because it's one of peace, it's one of hope, it's one of even somewhat protection that things are okay. And I'm going to just enjoy the things that are before me. And if you look back to the Old Testament, that image of pasture and peace and protection is so abundant. In Psalm 23, most of us know this one. The 23rd Psalm, the first two verses, it says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures, and he leads me beside still waters. It's that opportunity where things are going to be okay, where things are going to come together, where God is going to be there to lead and guide and direct us, but also to protect us from the things around us. But an even greater image, I think, comes from Ezekiel 34. In Ezekiel 34, the whole chapter just is filled with this image, but I want to read just verses 25 through 27. And God is speaking to his people, to the Israelites at the time, offering them this hope and this covenant and this image of promise of a future. And he says this, I will make them, or with them, a covenant of peace. I will banish wild animals from the land so that they may dwell securely in the wilderness and sleep in the woods. And I will make them and the place all around my hill a blessing. And I will send down the showers in their season, that they may be showers of blessing. And the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, and the earth shall yield its increase, and they shall be secure in the land. And they will know that I am the Lord when I break the bars of their yoke, and deliver them from the hand of those who enslaved them. This abundant image, this image of life, of fruitfulness, of hope, and of just wonderful peace and future. And again, we look forward to that as a future, as a forever with God in heaven, but I think he offers to us now an abundant life that a lot of us just don't go into, a lot of us just don't grab into because we get stuck in a lot of other things. And I think it fits really well with the image that Max Lucado gives us. In one of his books, he tells the story of a newlywed couple. And they had booked this wonderful this room in a hotel that they were really excited about. And so on the night of their wedding, they travel and they get to this hotel in the wee hours of the night in high hopes of this room that they're going to experience. But as they get their keys and they race up to their room, they enter and they're expecting this expansive room and these beautiful amenities. But that's not what they found. They found a skimpy room with no view, a very tiny bathroom, and worst of all, there was actually no bed, just a pull-out couch with a lumpy mattress. Being in the middle of the night and for other reasons, the frustrated and even angry couple decide they're just going to go to sleep and figure it out in the morning. And so in the morning, the sore-necked groom, he storms down to the desk clerk and demands, what was wrong with his room? Why didn't I get the things that I expected? What's going on here? And the clerk just looks at him and says, well, did you open the door? The door? I don't know what you mean. And quickly the groom runs back up to the room to see what the clerk was talking about. And as he enters this tiny little room with the cramped bathroom and everything, he sees another door inside. And as he goes to open that door, he steps in. And there on the there is the king-size bed with the chocolates on the pillow. There is the view of the city and just the beautiful things outside. There are the amenities that he expected in that room. But he didn't experience that until he opened that door. The problem is, the problem I see in my life, I think in a lot of our lives, is we settle for the cramped little room, the lumpy mattress. No view, nothing spectacular in our lives because we think that's all it is, that's all it can be. But Jesus, I think, offers us more. He offers us a beautiful view. He offers us a king-size bed with the chocolates on the pillow, the full-size spa, and all these different things that Jesus wants to pour into us. And not just forever, not just in heaven, but now. The problem is a lot of us just settle. And we don't seek more of God. We don't seek more of a deeper relationship with Jesus. We just settle in. When Jesus says he's the door, he's offering us an invitation to go deeper, to go more meaningful, to be given and blessed with so much more. But it's up to us to choose to go down that road. It's up to us to open that door. Let's pray. Gracious Father, we're so thankful that you've opened these doors, that you are the door, that we can step in further and further into this relationship with you, this connection, this communicative account, that we can just know you on such a deep level that you just pour and pour and pour into us. And I just pray that we are open to that, that we don't just settle for the baseline, for the basic relationship, for the basic package that comes with you, Lord, that we offer and open ourselves up to so much more. And it's not always easy, it's not always perfect, but it is filled with you. And we just pray that as we go through this season, as we celebrate your birth, your son's birth, we open our heart and our mind to that more and more. Pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen. So as we have an opportunity to respond in different ways, I just want to open the floor for whatever that looks like to you, whether it's coming down and it's getting prayer, whether it's a decision that needs to be made, or find me afterwards or this week to pray or to let me know what's going on. I want to encourage you all. Let's stand and let's sing our invitation hymn this morning. We're going to sing two verses this morning.